if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast 185. Barry O'Hanrahan and Paul Williams join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss this week's PGA and European Tour action, namely the Shriners Children's Open and the Open d'Espagne. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, chaps.
Morning, guys.
This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world-famous golf betting system website with our in-depth betting previews, masses of tournament statistics, and our predictor models all available completely free of charge with no paywall. Please subscribe to this podcast and drive the popularity of the show. We're available on social media, on Twitter. Paul's at Golf Betting. I'm at Bamford Golf, and Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. You can join our golf betting system Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. Plus, look out for the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. Please subscribe and like the shows. Now, you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, whatever you call it. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Now, as you guys know, these reviews are very, very important just to help spread the word, and the amount of reviews that you get gives you more clarity in terms of the visibility you get on recommended podcasts. That's why we need you to support the show. Now, we've got a great review here. This is the review. We've been waiting for this for a couple of weeks, haven't we, Paul? It's Harry from Wimbledon.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic.
The best golf podcast, 5 stars. This review is long overdue, but prompted by my meeting Steve and Paul by chance at Virginia Water Railway Station after Friday's play at Wentworth. After explaining that I'd been an avid listener of the golf podcast for several years, it had been a lifesaver during lockdown. They invited me to join them on the journey back to London. I really enjoyed the golf chat and felt like a guest on the podcast! Two terrific guys and so knowledgeable. All that was missing was the wonderful Barry, whose dry humour and sometimes left-field approach to golf betting is so refreshing. Follow these guys on a regular basis and you'll have a lot of fun as well as some big returns. Thanks for enhancing my enjoyment of our great sport. From Harry from Wimbledon. There you go. What a lovely 5-star review that is, chaps.
Yeah, brilliant, isn't it? And thanks, Harry, for taking the time to write that. And it was great to meet you, as we discussed a couple of weeks ago. It was a great chat we had on the train on the way back into London. And always good to chew the fat with like-minded people. So fantastic. Yep. And thanks for that.
That's a 5-star review and a half.
Were you saying, Barry, you were playing around golf the other day and someone came up to you and said, are you Barry off the podcast?
Yeah, I was playing up in Rosapenna, playing Sandy Hills, and was a friend of the group that we were playing in, was up there playing and going to be playing a couple of days later with some mates. So he jumped up a day early to play with us, Neville, and the voice was enough for him to make the connection. And so we had a chat about the show and golf betting in general, and how difficult Sandy Hills was in windy conditions. So to give a shout out to Neville, it was a pleasure to play with you. I hope to tee it up again soon.
So a little community that we continue to build, eh?
Yeah, fame precedes you guys.
Now, I said to you last week, Paul, that I was glad that you kept your Joachim Lagergren on your side, and it worked out nicely, didn't it? A full each way payout last week, 150-1.
Yeah, 125s it was when he went.
Oh, was it 125s?
Went to press. Sorry. But yes, he was. yes, it was a nice return. He had his chances as well, didn't he? The putter was on fire for the first, towards the back end of the front nine on Sunday, and I was getting rather excited, but he did miss a few tiddlers, which could have made all the difference. I think there were three inside 8 feet or so on Sunday that, had he made, it could have been a completely different story. But I guess for a 125-1 shot, you can't really grumble at getting in the end, it wasn't a kind of skinnier teeth place. He was solidly in second spot, and we were just hoping that Danny Willett made a mistake coming down the stretch to let him in, but it didn't happen.
Every time I kept checking the leaderboard, he'd make a bogey, so in the end I gave up, and then he started playing nicely.
Yeah, there was some really nice putts he made in there, but at the end of the day, he'd have had to have shot 8-under, 9-under to win outright on Sunday, which is that's a tough ask, isn't it, on a Sunday, regardless, particularly when you've got a Masters champion ahead of you and a guy who seemingly can find his form in these bigger events from absolutely nothing and walk away with another big title. If you look at his last four wins, Danny Willett, he won the Masters, the DP World Tour Championship, the BMW PGA Championship, and then last week, the Dunhill Links, and nothing else. No tiny little event in between. It's just...
There's not even a build-up of form in the main, is there? He just goes out and wins them.
He came in with form of missed cut, 71 missed cut. And as you said a few minutes ago before we started recording...
We followed him at Wentworth, didn't we?
Yeah, we followed him around for a bit at Wentworth to see how he was getting.
He was never in the fairway.
He was really poor, but... You listen to his interviews and it's no different to when he's won some of those other ones that I've just mentioned, maybe the Masters excluded, where he said, look, you know, when I'm good, I'm really, really good, but there's a lot of bad stuff in between, and when it all just clicks, away you go. I mean, 100-1 that was last week for Danny Willett, if you'd have been able to look past the incoming form and just say, well, you know, Danny Willett's a capable winner of a big golf tournaments on the European and worldwide stage. And if you'd have taken a chance at 100s, you'd have been rewarded in spades.
Before the Masters, he also in 2016 won the Amiga Dubai Desert Classic.
Did,
so, as you say, that's five rather large tournaments right there.
Yeah.
Mm.
He doesn't do Kazoo Open, does he?
No. How'd you call him, Barry?
It's a serious resume, isn't it? And it's just, it's hard to, because he doesn't pop up that regularly, I suppose we kind of write him off a bit, or it's hard to give credence to the fact that he's had such a ridiculously good career. I suppose that's, he's got the high variance career where he goes and grabs wins and then he disappears with a whole bunch of missed cuts. And so would you prefer that, or would you prefer the consistent top 20s making cuts every week?
Yeah,
you're going to want the wins, aren't you? I mean, there's the highs and the lows.
He's a kind of, Kevin Na doesn't win the bigger tournaments, but Kevin Na's the other one, another one, isn't he? Garbage, 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 win.
Yeah, garbage, garbage, I got garbage, the analogy.
Win. Yeah.
But Willett just wins a different level of tournament.
Yeah, he does, Na. Yeah. You know, you get your Jim Hermans who come along and just win at will every, now and again, but they aren't, they're not the Masters, they're not the BMW Championship or PGA Championship. They're not flagship events or, high-ranking events on the respective tour.
Patrick Reed-like, maybe, as well. We've always said Patrick Reed's a danger, 50, 55, 66-1. That's where Reed does most of his winning.
Yeah.
And they're big tournaments.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. But even if you knew, we all know all this. We all look at it. We all understand that he can win these tournaments. It's still difficult to pull the trigger when you stand there and stare at a form sheet coming into an event and, having eyeballed the performances as well and think, even at 100-1, do I pull the trigger here with a Danny Willett? And, yeah.
Well, what do you write? All you can basically say is this is an auto bet. Danny Willett wins big tournaments. Here's a list. I think he might win this one.
Yeah, there you go. 100-1.
And then,
yeah,
like 3 months later, another big tournament. You just sort of cut, paste, Danny Willett. It's almost that kind of bet. Because you won't see anything in the build-up that in any way, shape, or form tells you he's about to do what he does?
Would I be correct in saying the last one he kind of telegraphed was the Masters, where he had some form was shown
Dubai
before
one,
going
yeah.
in?
Dubai yeah, in yeah. February, yeah, and then he won the Masters in April, yeah.
But other than that, you know, it's a strange one. His last three wins are this time of year, you know, November, September, end of September and October. So, I mean, there's a little biorhythm for, as you like to point out as well,
that's
Steve.
True.
So maybe Danny Willett in the autumn, big event, and that's all we can do with it.
Make a note. He'll have to join my post-its on the wall here.
You remember when he won the BMW PGA Championship? He had been well backed, well fancied the week before at Crans-sur-Sierre, and again, quite rightly. And he missed the cut. He was awful, and you know everyone was like, oh, okay, full letdown. He's going into a bigger tournament this week. Everyone looks the other way, and he just pops up and wins. Infuriating, unless you are an avid Danny Willett fan who backs him blindly, and you'll be in clover. Anyway.
It was interesting to see most of the defeated European team actually had a good tournament, didn't they?
Relative terms,
Fleetwood was up there. Fat Hatton was right near the top of the lead, but he was at the top of the leaderboard for a long period of time, wasn't he, Hatton?
Mm. Yeah, Lowry was up there as well. There was no kind of tools down complete disasters, was there? It was there was some effort put in, and again I think that just shows you the gulf between the top tier guys and the kind of the run-of-the-mill European Tour players who, yeah, best will in the world, if the other players on their game, they're going to struggle to get anywhere near them, really. And you know, a fair play to Lagergren, because that was a strong performance against a number of far more fancied and far more elevated players in terms of the golfing hierarchy. But yeah, it's relatively easy to spot Lagergren. You put him on a coastal style track, big price, and just take your chance with him.
Yeah, you actually showed some. It's holding on to these players after they do you the week or outing before, and then when they miss the cut, and you're like, oh, I've had enough of him. And you did well there to actually say, nah, he's logically correct, and you got your rewards on that one. I was kicking myself because I had a couple of weeks to build up to the Sanderson Farms, because they actually had a field. They were one of the tournaments that let you saw the field before Friday cut off. So I knew he was playing. And the name that instantly jumped to me as soon as I saw the first field was Sam Burns. And when those first prices came out Monday and he was 16 to 1, I was just grabbing my hair. You know, it's like, oh, I can't. Not 16 to 1. So they often say, don't they? It's like the first impulse that comes into your mind should be the one that you go with. So yeah, Sam Burns won that 16 to 1. That's two wins now in the last. He won the Valspar, didn't he, back in May, I think it was. Precocious talent. His numbers last week at the Sanderson Farms were absolutely mad. He was number one for strokes gained off the tee. He gained 1.5 strokes per round. His approach play was ranked second. He gained over 2 strokes on the field per round with his approach play. And total tee to green, or strokes gained ball strike, tee to green, 3.7 strokes gained per round. And he actually, and I did say this last week, you can win this with a negative strokes gained putting split, the Sanderson Farms. He did. He was losing half a stroke a round on the greens. Shot 22 under. That's amazing. But yes, I think Sanderson Farms, again, Country Club of Jackson, what's going to go down in my notebook is it is Bomber City, it really is. Burns was 17th for driving distance, Nick Watney 20th, Cameron Young tied for second, he was 3rd for driving distance, 327 off the tee. So you need a particularly good week from someone that isn't a bomber to get close. We have seen it there, Ryan Armour and the likes. I had CT Pan just miss the frame. I think he was one shot off an each way place. And I had Siwoo Kim. Now, Siwoo Kim was interesting. He was actually tied for the lead Friday morning. I think he got 10 under. And I was thinking, oh, this is nice. And then when I looked next, he bogeyed two on the back nine and was actually finished the day on in 27th spot. So yeah, from the time for the lead, he was 27th. And from that point, you just could see from the history of the tournament, you've got to be right on the pace. And then he had an absolutely fantastic weekend and got a sliver of each way return for me at 30-1. But Kim's playing some really nice golf at the moment, so you move Kim.
When you get in, you know, you need to be in the low 20s under par to be getting right in the mix. You can't afford.
You can't have a day off, can you? If you're going to have a one under day or a level par day, you've got to shoot literally on a tournament like that at least a 61, 62 another day to catch up the lost ground.
Yeah.
It's foot to the floor stuff, isn't it?
If it's not straight 65, 66s, you've got to have that mad low round in there, haven't you? You mentioned Cameron Young. I had an email from Nicky M, who converses with me now and again on stuff. And he'd backed Lagergren, which he just popped me a note to say how pleased he was with that. But he also told me about a treble that he'd placed where he had Cameron Young at 400-1, Lagergren and Mario Fassi at 250-1, all three of them placed in a treble over the weekend.
Wow.
Which I haven't worked out the odds, but that must have been absolutely ginormous. So well done, Nicky. That's a great treble to land. More of those, please, everybody. That's exactly what we want to see.
Did you say, Barry, that guy that you can't pronounce the name of, and nor can I, did he win on the Challenge Tour last week as well?
Helen Kilder, yeah. I did not think about going down a tour level when I didn't see him in the field last week, so that's my bad. But yeah, so I take solace in it. I know Paul said he was going off at 25-1.
25, so yeah.
That may have deterred me a bit, although trying to not be price proud. But at the same time, the fact that I made the pick and then very close afterwards, he goes and wins. I take a little bit of comfort in that maybe the head and the picks are somewhere synchronizing up to grab a winner.
Fingers crossed.
I think we've got another birdie shoot this week, guys. The Shriners Children's Open. They come thick and fast, these birdie parties, don't they, now on the PGA Tour?
Saying that,
we've got the CJ Cup next week, which is being played at the Summit Club. In Las Vegas. And then the tour, another short field 78-man event, the Zozo, which is going back to Japan.
Oh, okay. They are actually going out to Japan this time.
I believe so, yes. So we've got those two short field loaded events the next 2 weeks coming up. And to be fair, the Shriners Open isn't that bad this week. We're used to seeing DeChambeau and Cantlay here. We've had Jason Day in the past. But it's slightly down on quality, but any field that's got Hovland, Koepka, Anser, Scheffler, Burns, Simpson, Nah, Matsuyama, Louis Oosthuizen, and Will Zalatoris, Sungjae Im, Harris English, and Corey Connors in the bad field. You can also throw in there Patrick Reed, Paul Casey, Siwoo Kim. So it's a decent tournament. I don't know what it is, but these players love a trip to Las Vegas. What can you do, eh?
Shocking.
It is shocking. I don't know what they get up to when they're not playing, but I'm sure they're all very professional about it.
Yeah, I'm sure they're taking a cabaret or something, don't they?
Clearly, you've got Butch Harmon's ranch and training centre out here as well, and a lot of the professionals use Las Vegas as a base. Maverick McNeely lives in Las Vegas. Ryan Moore. Colin Morikawa, who doesn't play this week. I guarantee you he plays next week. Kevin Na, Scott Piercy, Nick Watney, who's coming off a second. They're all Las Vegas residents. And, you know, you've got the likes of Ricky Fowler, who's over here a lot with Butch and Jimmy Walker and the likes. There's lots and lots of local links to Las Vegas. The golf course itself, I mean, we should all be okay with this. We come here every year. TPC Summerlin. What are we looking at with Summerlin? We are looking at a short course. It's 7,255 yards at altitude. It's a par 71. It's clearly a desert golf course. There's lots of rocks, cactuses, geckos, lizards. There's all manner of stuff off the fairway. For the holes, 18 holes feature water hazards. Fairways of Bermuda grass, rough is Bermuda grass, 2.25 inches this year it's quoted as. The greens are large, 7,400 square feet. They feature A1, A4 bent grass greens. So Bermuda grass, rough and fairways, bent grass greens. The only other course, Steve Agronomy Bamford here, the only other course that features that mix on the PGA Tour is Colonial Country Club. And if you go off tournament titles, that's the Charles Schwab Challenge as is. And it's interesting with Colonial. Laird, who won here last year at 225-20, he's got a couple of top tens at Colonial. Bryson DeChambeau's finished third there in the past. Rod Pampling, who won this ages ago, has got a second, a third and a sixth there. So there's quite a lot of crossover with Colonial. Kevin Na, of course, has won this twice and won at Colonial as well. So if you're looking for a correlating golf course, I don't think Colonial Country Club is a bad one. There are quite a few. What have you got to do here? Well, just the 2020, so last season, this golf course played at 68.34 strokes on average per day, which was over 2.5 strokes under par for the field. It was the third easiest golf course on the whole of the PGA Tour last season. So it's fairly obvious what we've got to do. We've got to shoot lights out this week. 2016 saw an opening round 11 under 60 from eventual champion Rod Pampling, plus minus 10, 61s from Francesco Molinari and Ches Reavie. Across the last three renewals, we've also seen Lucas Glover. Lucas Glover has got a great course record here. Kevin Na and Matthew Wolf all shoot 61s, 10 under par. So this course is very, very gettable. I mean, it's the perfect storm, really, isn't it? Wide fairways, they're 33 yards at 300 yards carry, which is 4 yards wider than Jackson last week and 8 yards wider than Silverado for the Fortinet. So wide fairways, a short course at altitude, and they always make sure the Nevada fire tenders are here to make sure those greens are nice and receptive.
Yeah.
Although all of the players will say, oh, it's so fast. The greens are very fast and they're shooting like 21 under par.
Yeah, it's an odd one, isn't it? Because going through the list of names you read through, you know, you included someone like a Lucas Glover in any of the conversation. And when you're talking about shooting that deep or scoring that deep and likening the types of Lucas Glover to the event, then it creates a bit of kind of indecision, I think, because you're thinking, well, on one hand, you've got, you know, you want someone who's rattling off birdie after birdie. Yet you've got all of these kind of, I don't know, more ball striking, tee to green men who seem to have managed to find a way to get over the line here over the last few years.
The cut line here last year was 7 under par.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
7 under to make the cut.
Yeah, you can't be a typical Lucas Glover missing everything inside 6 feet if you're going to get to that kind of number, are you?
Let's compute that. So there's, you know, I've shot 68 Thursday, 68 Friday. I'm 6 under par. Yeah, I'm playing all right here. Yeah? Missed the cut. Just madness. But yeah, I agree, Paul. It's one of those tournaments. Laird, ball striker. DeChambeau, no, outrageous. And this is DeChambeau 2019. He was a different animal back then. He wasn't all guns blazing. He was a nice classical golf course player then, not long enough, but actually used to hit tons of fairways. Cantlay in 17, he won in a weird year where it was blowing hard. I was on Cantlay that year at 21. Pampling. And then you get weird results as well, like Smiley Kaufman and Kevin Na. So this is it. It's one of those tournaments where you've either got plodders who can prosper, who can't putt, yeah, or someone with a red hot putter that actually's garden backs onto the golf course, Kevin Na. Yeah, he wins when he's like 11, he's gaining 11 strokes on the field with a putter.
Yeah.
It's one of those tournaments where you sit there with a field of 140, oh, I don't know what it is, 152 this week, and you just think, how can I make any sense of this whatsoever? This was also a statistic that I thought was interesting. Laird was 20th for strokes gained putting, DeChambeau 45th, Cantlay 32nd, and Pampling 39th. So they're absolutely nowhere near the top of the field the week they won. And then, of course, Kevin Na, when he won, he was 3.5 strokes putting positive each round. Complete and utter extremes. I do think, though, that this is a course, there's a couple of things that I do focus down on. I think this is a golf course where you've got to hit tons and tons of fairways. So if you're one of these prestigious length bombers that doesn't care about hitting fairways, you're not going to do very well around here. So that's one thing I think is an important, and it's a consistent number. I mean, if I go back 2010 through 2010, Jonathan Bird in 2010, driving distance, this is the average skill sets of the winners across that time period. Driving distance 16th. Driving accuracy. Sorry, that driving distance number is wrong. It should actually read 27th. I need to change that. Driving distance 27th in the field. Driving accuracy 11th. And you don't see that very often on the PGA Tour. And when you read a lot of the comments, they're all saying, well, I can't shoot 23 under par when I'm in the rough and getting flyer lies every second hole. Greens in reg 15th, a scrambling 23rd, putting average 7th. There's a surprise. You've got to have a good putting week. But that doesn't translate to strokes gained. So what it's saying effectively is you've got to create loads of good birdie chances that aren't overly long. You know, it's a great week from a 5 to 10 feet. Strokes gained off the tee, I'm running this 2015 through 2020. So Smiley Kaufman through Laird, looking at the skill set averages. Strokes gained off the tee, the average of the winners 20th. Approach play 15th, around the green 31st. Strokes gained tee to green 13th, and strokes gained putting, there you go, 24th. 24th in the field. And I gave you the list of those winners. Even the year Kevin Na won, he won in a playoff from Patrick Cantlay, yeah? They both shot 23 under par. Kevin Na was first for strokes gained putting. There's a surprise. Patrick Cantlay was 41st for strokes gained putting. So I'm more of the ilk of kind of going for players that I think can hit the prerequisite amount of fairways. And I love play. I don't know. Just players I think that are, I've gone for a slight mix. I've gone for four this week. It's just a. I think even the bookmakers are struggling to pick the favourite. It's one of those fields where they've lumped them all. You know, 20 to 25 to 1 is just crazy, really. Hovland, Koepka, Anser, Scheffler. Sam Burns is now shorter in price with most firms than Webb Simpson and the Masters champion Hideki Matsuyama and Kevin Na. And then you've got, 28 to 1, Simpson, Na, Matsuyama, Oosthuizen, Will Zalatoris, 25s to 30s, Sung Jae-im at 33s. Sung Jae-im never grows in price, does he? Always seems to be 25 to 33 to 1.
He has to be one of the worst bets on tour.
He's like, terrible, isn't he?
Almost like Tony Finau, just always in that kind of zone of odds and just not even delivering places that regularly.
He doesn't miss cuts. He just finishes like 15th every week.
Yeah, yeah. Devastating. Just...
Harris English at 33s, Corey Connors at 35s, and Patrick Reed 40 to 1. I mean, Reed is actually a good value price this week with Paul Casey. So there you go. So you've got between 20 and 40 to 1. You've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 14 players. 15 players, sorry. It's just that I don't think anyone's really got a clue who's going to win this. It has to be said. Here are the ones that I've gone for. I've gone for Hideki Matsuyama. 28-1 with William Hill, 8 places. You know Biorhythms, you said, Baron. Mm-hmm. Hideki Matsuyama has 1 win and 11, yes, 11 top 10 finishes in October and November on the PGA Tour. That's since 2013. And those finishes have come across China, Japan, Malaysia, South Korea, California, Nevada and Texas. He just seems to play well at this time of year, Matsuyama.
It's not geographically tied, just that's it.
There might be something in that as well, because apart from Texas, which was Houston last year, and that was the week before the Masters, if you remember, because Dustin Johnson finished second behind Carlos Ortiz and then won the week after the Green Jacket. Matsuyama was second in that. But across all of those other golf courses, in the main, apart from Malaysia, which is Paspalum, they're all bent grass greens. And as we know with Hideki, he is a bent grass green kind of guy. 3 of his 6 PGA Tour wins have come on pure bent grass greens, and 2 of the others have come on Bermuda grass, overseeded with bent grass. And both of those came in the desert in Phoenix. And actually, I'm looking at Laird. He's got a great record at TPC Scottsdale. DeChambeau's got a top 5 there. Rod Pampling had finished 8th and 12th in Phoenix. Webb Simpson's won this in 2013. We know that Simpson's a winner at Scottsdale, and he's finished 2nd and a number of top 10s. Ryan Moore's got a great record there. Kevin Na's played well in Phoenix. So I love that link to Scottsdale. I really like it. And I just thought 28-1 for the reigning Masters champion, coming off a 6th place, a very under-the-radar 6th place finish in California for the 14th. I thought that was half decent price. So yeah, I'm on Matsuyama. I mean, if we're looking for team no putt this week, Matsuyama's pretty damn positive, isn't he? The bloke cannot putt. But on bent grass, pure bent grass, if he can gain a stroke on the greens, if he can play as well from tee to green, which he did in California a few weeks ago. He was 17th off the tee, 10th for approach and 3rd for tee to green at Silverado a fortnight ago. So if he can just make a few putts, Hideki, and you'll be all right. 28-1. So I'm on Hideki.
You remember that purple patch he had a few years ago where he won like 6 events or something worldwide in the space of, I don't know, 3 or 4 months.
The putter
was absolutely on fire for that stretch. It's odd how he kind of waxes and wanes with that, with the flat stick. But yeah, if he ever found it again for any consistent period of time, he'd be devastating, wouldn't he?
He would be devastating. So yeah, Matsuyama for me. I don't know, I just think once he got that green jacket, it was such a huge, huge deal. It was huge for him, it was huge for Japan, huge for Asian golf. Almost kind of stepping back from that was always going to happen. But there's just been signs, isn't there? He finished, I think he was 2nd at the WGC, the one at St. Jude. You know, he's just percolating again. He seems to have got over the green jacket. Things have calmed down. And with a South Korean-sponsored event next week in Las Vegas, and then, of course, the trip back to Japan, you would have thought that's really focusing his mind to produce his best stuff. So I'm just hoping that he actually finds a putter this week. But with Matsuyama, you might find he just misses the cut. You can never be sure. My other selection towards the top of the betting is Matthew Wolf. And again, this one goes out with a complete warning, because every time I back Wolf, he's an absolute walking disaster. However, I've got 45-1, 2 points each way with Betfred, because Wolf was 2nd here last year. And I just liked the way he played last week. First two rounds, he wasn't great, made the cut. And then from that point on, he was driving the ball beautifully. His approach play was very, very positive for rounds 3 and 4 at the Sanderson Farms. And when you look at Wolf and when you look at his results, bearing in mind this, he does live in Florida, I believe. He's done nothing so far on Bermuda grass greens. Everything he's done is either bent grass or a mix of bent and poa. So I think he's going to like the greens. He clearly knows how to play the golf course because he shot 10 under par 61 on Saturday and got into a playoff with Austin Cook and Martin Laird last year. And he's one of these guys, 47th in the official world golf rankings, could do with some good results to make sure he stays in that top 50 for the 2022 Masters invite pre-Christmas. And I think of some of these players, I don't know if Burns was one of those, I don't know if Danny Willett was one of those last week, who probably looks at the Ryder Cup and thinks to themselves, it's a kick up the bum. It's like, I need to get myself back in the mix so that I'm going to make the President's Cup next year and I should be on these teams, not languishing as I am at the moment. I think Wolf can take that positively, potentially. His one PGA Tour title came in 2019 at TPC Twin Cities up in... they play that in Minnesota, don't they, I believe? The 3M Open. So, yeah, Wolf, 45-1. Of the top guys, is there anyone from that morass of players that either of you would back?
I think statistically, Wolf was the only one who did catch my eye as well. You know, you look at the strokes gained stats that we've published on the site and he's all over those. His record here was at 18th and 2nd. And he was where my eye got drawn, I must say. I've not particularly got anyone near the top. Anyone you fancy near the top there, Barry?
You asking me? No, I'm the wrong
person. Well, no, I know. Yeah, I know.
The short odds, especially on a week where it just seems like a winner could come out of absolutely anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, well, Barry, let me back that up. Laird was 225-1 last year. Mm. Nah, 70-1. DeChambeau, 14-1. Cantlay, 20-1. It's feast or famine.
Yeah,
anyone can win, man.
And when you're banking on one of the short, like say you're backing somebody under 30-1, you're banking on them probably having to shoot 68-68 to just make the cut. Let's maybe say 68-69 to just make the cut. You know, you're asking for a ripping fast start, so I'd rather hold my money back and maybe pick a couple of the bigger names into the weekend once you see where they establish themselves, and you might get maybe high teens on them if they're a few off the pace. So no, I haven't gone for the shorties to start. I've gone outside. Surprise, yeah. Surprise.
I think the one that caught my eye when I was just fishing through the stats yesterday was Will Zalatoris, in terms of tying in with the kind of style of play and having shot a mad low round last week. Was it 61, I think he shot, was it?
My only concern with Zalatoris is, can he hit enough fairways? Because he's not the straightest off the team.
Lots of greens.
Like last week, 46.4% green fairways hit. 26 of 56, he was 56th of those that made the cut for fairways. And I just don't... but to win... it doesn't follow the trend.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm saying that and I'll put Matthew Wolf up, who's one of the non-strays. But the one thing I will say is when he's played here those two times, he seems to dial it back and knows the importance of hitting fairways.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of lead. I was sitting here yesterday just kind of spinning plates. Who do you go? I mean, Anser, 25-1. I mean, it's obvious. He's a WGC winner. He's got 240 here. If we've spoken about everything about this golf course, hitting fairways, tons of greens, not a great putter. Well, that's Anser. You could argue Scottie Scheffler's going to have the week of his life. He hasn't won on the PGA Tour. He was unbeaten at the Ryder Cup. He beat John Rahm in singles. If there's anyone with momentum hitting here, it's Scottie Scheffler. And he's also had a top 10 at Phoenix. There's stuff you can throw at Scheffler. you could say Webb Simpson, you know, Mr. Magnolia, Barry would shoot me down in flames. And not that that put me off, but is there enough from Simpson recently to, it's just, I don't know. Kevin Nart, I don't back Kevin Nart 28-1. He wins at 50-1 and above. So it kind of took me to Matsuyama. You got Louis Oosthuizen, and he hasn't won in the States. You know, there's a myriad of different players there. So yeah, that I went down the route of, it doesn't feel Patrick Reed-like either, even at 40-1. That it doesn't. I mean, if Reed was to win this, he'd have to go Kevin Na nuts with a putter. That's how he would win it. So potentially, I've jumped off Siwoo Kim. That might come bite me on the bum because he's playing some great stuff. I've also jumped off my old mate Mito Pereira. I expect he comes and probably wins because I've jumped off him, but don't know.
Why did you jump off Mito?
Good question. I haven't got an answer in. I do think he's bent grass positive, Mito. I think that 66-1 that's hanging there with Unibet is a great prize. I don't know. I think probably it'd be a mistake. The other thing I do, you think about Mito, grew up in Chile, grew up around Santiago. Guess where that is? Well, that's altitude. So I don't think the altitude's going to be an issue. He does hit lots of fairways, and his tee to green game is miraculously good. I think what we saw last week was the fact that Mito, again, was top five for tee to green, but clearly didn't get on with those Bermuda grass greens that particular week. So coming back to bent. I mean, Paddy Power running scared of him. He's 40-1 with Paddy Power. And Unibet have him up at 66-1.
Yeah. Boyle's got him down at 35s.
Yep.
It's a big disparity there.
I think Mito would be a good bet. That's probably going to come and bite me on the bum. The one I went with was Taylor Gooch, who I think's trending. He's a great approach player. I think Gooch's weakness sometimes is the fact that he isn't the longest off the tee and he isn't the straightest. So hopefully he can have a good driving week. His approach play is miraculous, Taylor Gooch. It's proper elite. I just think he's trending towards a win quite soon. And also, you look at Gooch. He's got a top four at PGA West where they play the American Express. He also had a top four here in Las Vegas, or top five in Las Vegas last year where they played the CJ Cup. So I think he likes the clean air of the desert. I just think Gooch. I should have probably put Pereira and Gooch up, but there you go. I've gone for Gooch, and then I went for one at a bigger price. And we've been mentioning him. I mentioned the one that caught my eye was when he was in the top five at the Northern Trust a while ago. And you think about the Northern Trust, that was effectively one of probably the strongest field of the whole year. Mm. Tom Hoagie, who when you look at Hoagie, he has got a whole catalogue of desert results. On a golf course where, you know, power off the tee is negated, that's the kind of course where someone like a Hoagie could come to the party. But he's finished 10th, 4th and 6th at Montreux Golf and Country Club, which is where they used to hold the Barracuda. He's finished 6th at PGA West. I was on him that week, 300-1. And 7th here at TPC Summerlin in 2017. He's also finished 2nd at the 2020 Greenbrier, which, as we know, the Greenbrier over in West Virginia. That is also played at altitude on bent grass greens. He came 2nd that year behind, I think it was Joaquin Neiman. Joaquin's only PGA Tour victory. So yeah, Tom Hoagie, 150-1 I got on him, 8 places each way with Ladbrokes. But yeah, so Hoagie, Taylor Gooch, Matthew Wolf and Hideki Matsuyama. What could go wrong? Those are my four. And I'm regretting not putting up Mito Pereira.
Oh, there's still time, Stephen.
Just for the listeners, Stephen.
I think Paul was going, where's you need to get this out? You need, and I was like, oh, and in the end I was split. And this is it. It's difficult to know who to back, to be honest, because it's one of those. It's just you could tip up 40 players this week. From 500-1 and in.
I can't believe you're blaming Paul. I can't believe you're blaming Paul for not picking Mito. Yeah, I mean, just get on to Odds Checker, grab the best combo of places and price, and just back him, because you know you're going to regret not doing it. At least you've avoided FOMO for the rest of the week.
So, he's 60-1 with Betfred right now, 8 places each way. Do you know what? I might have to write a paragraph and just add him to my tips, because if he wins this, he's going to break my heart.
That's an emotional insurance bet. I've gone for a couple of outsiders quickly, because we do need to talk about Spain. I've backed Pat Perez back to Vegas. Listen, Pat's boom or bust when it comes to this event. So I'm going for the boom week. He's had a third and a seventh here. Miscut last year, but third and a seventh his previous two outings. He had a miscut a couple of weeks ago, but before that was playing some all right golf. So yeah, whatever. The other one then is Matthew Neesmith, who has an 18th and an 8th here, but absolutely zero incoming form. Miscut, 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 51st, miscut. So let's hope he's this week's Danny Willett.
Yeah.
And I backed Ricky as well, because I can't not back Ricky.
What price is Ricky? I don't know. That's a genuine question.
100-1.
Oh, wow. That's a good price.
It is a good price on a player who's got to...
he's a winner. Where's he won? He won at Phoenix. What about you, Paul?
Yeah, very nice.
You must have gone for Pat Perez, because you love Pat Perez in a birdie fest.
No. I've only backed two, actually. I've backed Ryan Moore, and he fits that ball striker profile.
Definitely.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Well, I'll give you some stats in a second, which might open your eyes.
Ryan Moore.
He won in 2012. He's been 7th, 9th, 15th, 19th here. Do you know the number that got me? When he won here in 2012, he led putting average. He was first for putting average. When he was 15th in 2016, he was 8th putting average. He was 4th for strokes gained putting, because they were measuring it back then. When he was 13th in 2019, he was 4th for putting average here. He was 12th for strokes gained putting. He likes these greens. He may not like any other greens in the whole of the world, but he likes the greens here.
Ryan Moore is just bent grass monster in here. Bermuda grass, no good.
Yeah, bent grass going back. Going back to your preview, he's got 3 wins on bent. So, I think he ranks 4th or 5th in your list of bent grass winners in the field over time. So that kind of gets him a tick there. He was 2nd at the John Deere Classic recently. Another one of these par 71 resort courses, bent grass greens. It all kind of adds up there. 4 miscuts after that, which kind of explains his price down there at 150-1. But he was 39th last week, which was much, much better. 16th for strokes gained approach. And now that he lands on a course where he loves the bent grass greens and can putt absolutely lights out while hitting every single fairway, and his approach game is trending, he's a
bargain.
What
can possibly go wrong?
Absolutely. He's an absolute bargain, 150s. So Ryan Moore's in. I've also backed Jim Herman, who we mentioned a few moments ago. And he's, again, if you look at his raw stats, don't look at strokes gained with Jim, because he's not really gaining that many strokes. If you look at his raw stats in terms of driving accuracy, over his last 7 starts, he's ranked 4th, 8th, 4th, 7th, 31st, missed a cut, and then 1st for driving accuracy last time out of the 40 net. He's hitting fairways for fun. He's hitting some decent numbers of greens as well. He's just not making or not gaining the strokes across the whole board that's allowing him to get into really contending positions. But he's made 6 of the last 7 cuts he's made, which is a revelation for Jim. And he's long overdue a win. I mean, he tends to win every 20, 25 events. So this is his 25th event I've just counted up since his last win. He's absolutely ripe. 500-1 he is out there, Jim. He's at the right price point. His game in terms of off the tee is absolutely spot on for this. He's finished top 20 here in the past, which is neither here nor there, but at least he's got some positive history on this track. And I think he'll tear the place up at 500-1. I see no reason not to back him. So he's in. Herman's in. Ryan Moore's in, and I do really like your Matthew Wolf shout. I think Wolf could go particularly well this week.
Open to España.
Indeed, the Spanish Open. Actually, we're heading to Spain for the start of a 3-week stint over there, since we've had a little bit of a rejig with the schedule, as we've seen over the last year or two. It's all pretty fluid, but we've got the Open de España in Madrid this week. We've got Valderrama next week. Valderrama field, I was mentioning to you guys off mic, which let me just grab my sheet that's got the list of some of the names on there. But next week we've got John Rahm, Martin Keimer, Matt Fitzpatrick's coming over, Aaron Rye's coming over as well, Bernd Wiesberger's staying on in Spain, Rafa Cabrera Bayo, Christian Bezuaden, who's playing, Andy Sullivan. There's loads of kind of decent level players playing at Valderrama next week, and a strong undercard as well. It's going to be a really good event over there next week. And then after that, we've got Mallorca. We're playing on the island of Mallorca the following week as well. So we've got three decent events over in Spain. This week, though, it's a bit of a top heavy one. We've got John Rahm, top of the market, only player in the top 50 at the moment, 9-4 favourite, being backed in. He may well go off at 2-1 across the board, which we haven't seen really since the likes of when Tiger Woods was Woods used to go off shorter than that, but even so, 2-1 is a short favourite for a full field golf event. Bernd Wiesberg 18-1 is the second favourite. Then we're into the likes of Callum Hill, Victor Perez at 35s, Guido at 35s. Masahiro Kawamura has been backed in at 45s best price, 50-1 bar. So by the time you get to the seventh player in the field, you're already up to 50-1. Such is the dominance of John Rahm at the top of the market. Where are we? We're playing the Club de Campo Villa de Madrid. It's a 7,112-yard par 71. It's a resort course, tree-lined, but it's not claustrophobically so. It's not Valderrama. Smallish bent power greens. They lengthened it a bit before they played here in 2019 when John Rahm won. Rahm still shot 22 under, even though they'd attempted to make it a little bit trickier. And it needs a bit of weather really to protect it, and we're not going to get that this week. 25 degrees centigrade, some mid 70s Fahrenheit, virtually no wind. I was looking on Windfinder when I was doing my prep work for this, and one of the days had winds of 1 mile an hour. I mean, seriously, these guys are going to absolutely rip the course to shreds, I think. We do have some older form here, and from prior to the renovation in 2019, we've got the Spanish Open was played here 5 times during the 90s. Slightly more recently, we've got the Open Madrid and the Madrid Masters. They were played between 2000 to 2005, and then again, the last time before its renovation was 2008. And then, of course, we've got the event from last time we played this Spanish Open in 2019. It does hop about, this event, so I'll give you an idea, a flavour of who's won this event, but bear in mind they've been on very different courses many times. It hops about a lot, and a lot of the courses don't bear much resemblance to the others. So we've got 2010, Álvaro Quirós won at 18-1. 2011 was Thomas Aiken of 45s. Francesco Molinari won at 16-1 in 2012. Rafael Jacquelin won at 55-1 in 2013. I remember that was a tough coastal track. I think that was the one where he won on about the 10th playoff hole after an absolute marathon. 2014 was Miguel Angel Jimenez, won at 22-1. James Morrison was 225-1 when he won in 2015. Andrew Beef Johnston, 100-1, he won at Valderrama, to give you an idea of the different style of tracks that have been used. He was 100-1 in 2016 when he won. 2018 was John Rahm at 4-1, and then John Rahm backed that up. He defended successfully in 2019 at 100-30 2 years ago. So you've got 4-1, 100-30, 9-4 best price at the moment, and verging in on 11-5, maybe 2-1 by the time we go on Thursday for John Rahm to make it a hat trick of Open d'España titles over the last three starts. I guess if you look through the stats, we do have some extensive stats from 2019. We've got strokes gained. We've also got the regular traditional stats as well. I mean, Rahm absolutely battered the field. So his stats stand out quite starkly against everyone else. He was a 5-stroke winner. He was 3rd for fairways that week, 12th for greens in regulation, 3rd for scrambling, 1st for putting and old money. If you look at strokes gained, he was 1st for strokes gained off the tee, 1st for strokes gained tee to green. So he made, or he got, most of the damage was done from his long game off the tee and his tee to green performance. And perhaps that's a better pointer, really. If you look at 2nd place, Rafa Cabrera Bayo, he was 2nd for strokes gained tee to green. So the first two home were 1st and 2nd for strokes gained tee to green. He was also 7th for strokes gained off the tee. So I think you're going to find, and maybe not overly dissimilar to the style that you were talking about on over at the Shriners, Steve, it could well be that a strong long game performance, a strong tee to green performance in terms of strokes gained, really is what sets up these birdie and eagle opportunities.
So we're looking for ball strikers in both events. That's what we're kind of saying, unless it's Kevin Na in Las Vegas.
Yeah, yeah. You're gonna have outliers in these things, aren't you? Because if you're talking about a resort track where 20 under wins, you can get someone who goes absolute bananas with a putter. And, you know, if they're gaining 10, 12 shots with the putter over the course of 4 days, you know, it doesn't take a great deal with the rest of the game to get themselves into the contending position. But, I would suggest when we look back on both the leaderboards on Sunday night, then maybe 6 or 7 of the top 10 on both will be more towards the style of player that we've kind of suggested would be the better option for this week. We shall see. Form-wise, looking back, I mean, there's ten winners I've just read through, or all the winners since 2010 at least. Each one of them had a top 10 finish in their last 10 starts, so a little bit of incoming form is fine. John Rahm had actually missed the cut of the Dunhill Links on his previous start before winning in 2019. Prior to that, his previous 9 starts, his worst was worst finish was 13th. He'd won the Irish Open. He was in a really rich vein of form, so I think you've got to assume that some decent incoming form is the order of the day here. And birdies and eagles, that is where we need to be going this week, I think. Keep your card as clean as possible. Attack the scoring holes. Make lots of birdies. Get yourself up towards that kind of 20 under or beyond number, I think, is going to be where they are this week. Unless we get an absolute curveball thrown at us and we find that they've grown the rough to something astronomical in the meantime. But there's no indication that that's going to be the case. And with no wind and placid conditions and nice sunny weather, I think it's going to be quite a low scorer. Difficult now to play this one, isn't it? Because you've got a player at the top. I've not seen any of the previews that I've read from other people out there so far this week. I've not seen anyone dare stick John Rahm up at 9-4. I expect someone might at some point and just go, you know, put all of their pennies on John Rahm for 1 week. Which, yeah, you could do, I suppose, couldn't you?
Are you suggesting Steve Palmer doesn't put him up at 9-4? Of course.
I'll be interested to see how Steve plays it because, you know, he'll look at the raw numbers.
So, he put Sam Burns up at 16-1 last week, and I was prize proud. And guess what happened?
Yeah. He could have had a monster double with Lagergren. So, but yeah, it's difficult because you could make a very, very, very strong case and say, well, John Rahm, well, he's won the last two Spanish Opens, he's the world number one. He's won 6 of 16 career regular tour events on the European Tour. I mean, 6 of 16, the price is justified on that ratio alone. You don't need to go much further than that. He's head and shoulders above everyone else in the field. If you're trying to build a case against him, if he's won 6 out of 16, that means he's been beaten 10 out of the 16 times. So he's not infallible. He can be beaten if someone goes out there and absolutely, you know, shoots lights out, which can happen, particularly on a resort course. He's coming off a missed cut. Now, if you look, go back through his history, he's missed the cut prior to last week, or last time at the 40 net. He's missed the cut 16 times. He's only won once on his subsequent start from those 16 missed cuts. The fly in the ointment of that angle of attack is that one win was here. So he does have some previous of going missed cut win on this particular track, but let's work with that. You've also got the Ryder Cup. I mean, we need to consider it, I think. He single-handedly carried Team Europe for large parts of those 3 days. And despite his own performance, he's got to have been disappointed with the output or the outcome of that, of those 3 days of the Ryder Cup itself, and the, you know, almost humiliating result that ensued. So has that taken an effect? We'll have to see how he comes out. After the last Ryder Cup in 2018, he didn't play for a month after that. He skipped the Spanish Open that time. When he re-emerged, he finished 22nd on his next start at the WGC HSBC Champions. He was fourth on the Earth course, which he loves. He loves the Earth course. He was fourth on his following start after that. So he didn't particularly hit the ground running immediately after the Ryder Cup in 2018. 3 years long, I know. He was the best player on Team Europe. I understand that. Disappointment is the other side of it. I don't know. We're kind of clutching at straws, I guess, trying to build a tentative or very flimsy case against him. But for me, if he wins at 9-4, then so be it. But he's got to be on it from the very start here. If he goes out and shoots 1 or 2 under or worse on the first round, I think he could be a long way off the lead. And you know, at that point, do you start to see a frustrated John who's not catching up and making the birdies as quickly as he reasonably can? If he goes off to an absolute flyer, shoots 62 in the first round, you're not going to see him for dust, I don't think. And you could be then looking, or you should be looking at markets where you're trying, you know, wire to wire winner markets potentially, or shots won by markets. Potentially also looking at playing the without Rahm markets. There weren't any up when I was doing my preview yesterday. They've started to emerge now, so well worth a look if you have a fancy but want to play him without Rahm. There are some bookies that have gone out there without Rahm and without Wiesberger as well. So you potentially take the top two out of the market and have a completely separate betting heat for this particular week. I went around the houses with this, and in the end, I decided just to go with three each way shots who could, on their day, compete and contend against John Rahm if everything goes their way. And I'll leave it at that. I didn't really want to go with a full staking plan on this because if John Rahm wins, then it could be, you know, it could be a painful week. So I've just gone with three. I've gone at the top with Nicolai Højgaard at 50-1. And if we're talking about the Ryder Cup, as we were a second ago, talking about 2023, I expect we'll see a Højgaard or potentially two there in a couple of years' time. Rasmus is out in the States this week. He's playing over in your event, Steve. I've looked at the prices with him. They're really quite divided about how he'll fare as well. So interesting to see how he goes. Nicolai, though, is on the road to catching him up after his win at the Italian Open a few weeks ago. He followed that up with a 20th at the BMW PGA Championship, 14th at the Dunhill Links on debut, which was pretty impressive last week. He is 10th for strokes going tee to green for the season to date. And when he was winning in Italy last month, he was first for strokes going off the tee. He was first for strokes going tee to green as well. That marries in perfectly with how Rahm and Cabrera Bayo got into first and second positions when they played here a couple of years ago. Ultimately, I think the potential of Nicolai Højgaard is huge. I think 50-1, given that if he gets in the position, he could be the kind of player who's got that youthful exuberance to go out and really give Rahm a run for his money. So I've taken a chance on him. I've also taken a chance on Alexander Levy, 80-1. We've got a young buck in the team. Perhaps adding someone like Levy with his swashbuckling style Could also push John Rahm all the way by the end of Sunday. He loves these scoreable flat tracks, doesn't he, Levy? That's his game. His first four wins, he shot a 63 or better in each of his first four wins on tour. 62, 61s, he was all over those wins. And when there's a score to be made, he's absolutely in his element. He's fit and healthy again after some back issues, and he's swinging at full speed again. I love watching his swings when he's absolutely hammering that ball off the tee. It's a joy to watch. And he plays with a lovely smile on his face as well. Very amiable character, Alex Levy. Four consecutive events now of strokes gained positive in all of his long game measures, which is good. He was second at the Gazoo. He shot a 66-64 to finish runner-up to Callum Hill. That was his best finish since 2018. And he was also 15th here last time out in 2019. That came after four straight missed cuts. And then he finished 15th here. So a massive improvement would suggest that this track here suits his eye. And although he missed the cut last week at Carnoustie, no issue there. John Rahm and Bayo both lost or missed the cuts at the Dunhill Links before finishing first and second last time he came here. He did shoot 5-under at Carnoustie on the first day before the wind picked up. And that, again, suggests to me that Alex Levy is in some decent form. So Levy's in at 80-1. And finally, I've added a splash of the enigmatic style of Alvaro Quiroz to my team as well at 250-1. You go back at the days back, 2006 through 2011. He was a top 25 golfer. He was right at the top of his game, Alvaro Quiroz. He won six times in his 20s before it all dried up. Not much since. He won the 2017 Rocco Forte Open to remind us that he's still capable. There's a couple of second, third place finishes, but lots and lots and lots of missed cuts. There's, again, another one of these players who is quite difficult to call. But if you look at the track here, if you look at the players who played well in 2019 and going back prior to that as well, there's some decent crossover with Quiroz. John Rahm, we've talked about ad nauseum. He's won twice at the Earth Course. Alvaro Quiroz has won at the Earth Course back when it was the Dubai World Championship back 2011, I think he won that. Rafa Cabrera-Bello has won the Dubai Desert Classic, as has Alvaro. Charles Schwartzel, who won here in 2008, pre the renovations, he is a Leopard Creek master. He's won there multiple times. Alvaro Quiroz got his first European Tour win at Leopard Creek. And also, some of the other players in the top 10 from both of those leaderboards cross over in terms of their performances and the tracks that they've played particularly well on with Quiroz as well. He does have some form here. Fourth in 2008. He opened with a 74, then shot 66, 66, 64, finished fourth, went on to win at Villamora the next week. And again, Villamora, I think Barry mentioned this to me off mic, is another one of the tracks which fits in very nicely with some of the players who perform well here. A few handy positions recently. 27th at the Dunhill Links last week. That was his best effort over there on the Fife Coast for over a decade. And I think he could be the kind of player that could just pop up and really get into the mix at a mad price, 250-1. So just the three. Quiroz 250s, Levy 80-1, and Nicolai Højgaard at 50-1. Any fancy from you, Barry?
I'm sticking with Kawamura. He's gonna do it at some stage. Maybe it's this week, maybe it's not, but it's quite a nice price for him considering Rahm is there in the field. So I'll have a go with Kawamura and who's the other one? Sorry, Jeff Winter was fourth here last year, 14th last week, and I was able to snag him at 80-1, I think it was.
Yeah.
I took the extra places. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a capable player, Winter. We shall see. What about you, Steve? Anyone catch your eye?
No idea. No idea whatsoever.
You're not pushing all the pennies in on John Rahm.
Do I remember him winning his first Open to Spania at 3-1?
4-1 it was the first one, and then 100-30 his second time. So yeah, his price is rapidly going down. If he wins this one, he'd be going off about 5-4 next year.
I have followed a friend's shout just while Steve is percolating there, just to get Ram into the betting this week. So he doubled Ram with Harrington, who's playing in the constellation Furyk and Friends.
Yeah, that's so right. Yeah.
I've gone and taken on that double. So that gets me Ram on board.
Paddy in the kind of 25-28-1 bracket, something like that.
25s.
Okay. Interesting to see how he goes.
It's an option, yeah. It's a good option actually, isn't it?
It's amazing how many guys like hit the Champions Tour for their, you know, one of their first starts and just grab a win. Mm. It's like the freedom is there. They're like, oh, this is easy now, and then bang.
Yeah, I could see that. I'm still manning over Mito Pereira.
Would you just back him? Steve, I'll loan you a tenner. I'll give you a tenner to put the bet on. Cheeky five for each way, and then your head
is
set.
I'm still manning Mito.
Why don't you leave it until late in the day on Thursday when the best prices are out on the exchange, and just put a few quid on to satisfy your curiosity?
He was fourth in Mexico and I think second in Colombia at high altitude on one of the Corn Ferry years he did. So clearly altitude's not an issue.
Steve, I've backed him just there, just to...
You backed him?
I'll sell you my bet.
We've been doing this for too long. We know the pitfalls, but we still fall into them year after year.
It's emotional insurance bet. So you just even if it loses, you don't have the torture for the week, and I think that's worth a couple of euro. So, and I've backed Mito a couple of times recently. So I'm way less of a candidate for this than you are.
Second for greens in regulation this year. 34th for driving accuracy. Second for ball striking.
Steve, what are you doing?
I know. Right, I think that's us, chaps.
Yep.
I think that is us. I hope you have another good week with your bets, Paul, and to you, Barry.
Yeah, best of luck, guys.
I hope the listeners have a great week, and we will be back next week for the Valderrama tournament on the... It's my favourite beer, actually. My favourite lager, the Estrella Masters, isn't it, or something?
Yeah, Andalusia,
actually. Yeah, and the CJ Cup. On the PGA Tour. Don't forget, 5-star reviews. Very, very important for us. And we'll see you next week. Goodbye.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf.